Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me on the podcast this week is current Scotland captain Rachel Malcolm and former Scotland captain Chris Patterson. Our special guest this week on the podcast is none other than Scotland and Exeter Chief star Sam Skinner.
Well, there's no Al this week as he is on holiday, but I'm delighted to say that coming back after a period of hiatus, is that the right word to use? A period of absence. Chris Patterson is back on the podcast. Mr. Mossy, how are you, sir?
Are you really delighted?
Of course I am.
Good lad. Yeah, no, I'm well. It's, coming back on a part-time basis from furlough. Obviously, it's a difficult time for everybody. Everyone's in difficult situations. But, it is what it is. The players are back training as we work towards the game. So, obviously, most of my time spent working with the kickers and working with the players. So, obviously, there's not a huge amount to do when the players are all on furlough. So, back on a kind of part-time basis and delighted to be joining you guys back in the podcast.
Your hair's looking pretty... I was kind of hoping you'd have a massive, great, big, bushy beard and long hair, because I know you'd hate that. But you managed to actually...
Dave, man.
Did you manage to do some homemade haircuts during it?
Oh, yeah. No, I've had a few. Luckily, I had a set of clippers prior to lockdown. I've got neighbours and friends who tried to get them during lockdown, and it was just a no-go. Sold out all the place. So, it's something that I've done in the past. So there's some little bit of experience, although I was doing kind of family haircuts for the son and everything. And it's a hit or a miss, but...
Both your son and daughter just get shaved heads at the moment.
I know, exactly. I wasn't allowed to let loose on the daughter, but listen, if it goes wrong, who's going to know?
It's going to grow back.
It's going to grow back.
Maybe exactly. Not for everyone, but it's going to grow
well,
back.
Well, maybe not for me shortly late enough.
No, it's proud to have you back. Rich, you've obviously been with us for a number of weeks now. How's the landscape looking for you guys? You know, there's not really much info. We don't really know about the World Cup qualifiers for Scotland yet, but, you know, from your perspective, maybe around club, what's happening down you in what you've been working on?
I think in terms of the club, we're moving a wee bit quicker down in England than you guys up there in terms of the women's club stuff. We are hopefully, I think, going to be back in training relatively soon. I think there is a date flying about in terms of actually getting back to playing, which hopefully won't be too far after what we would normally start. So we normally start kind of mid September, so I will not start on time, that's for sure, but I don't think it's going to be a million miles away from that. So hopefully that all goes ahead, but it's quite exciting now to have something to work towards, because obviously, as you say, we didn't know anything about the league, but also World Cup qualifiers still haven't been decided in terms of where they're moving to and how they're going to look. So we're still waiting on that, but at least we've got something in terms of like training wise to look forward to and get ready for them whenever they do come.
And how much are you chomping at the bit to get going again?
Yeah, no, I am. I think I've trained pretty consistently throughout the whole of lockdown. There's not a huge amount else to do, but also just with all of us are just trying to stay in shape, because obviously we didn't know when we get back to rugby, so you want to be in condition where you can just play rugby and not have to worry about the fact that you're not fit or strong enough or whatever it might be. So yeah, I'm bored of training on my own, so just to be back with a group of players and doing stuff with other people will be really good for motivation and just keeping going. So no, I absolutely can't wait.
I suppose it's keeping fit's not the problem, is it? Like, you know, active, fit, healthy, it's being conditioned.
Yeah.
And with, you know, little or no access to gyms really until, you know, anything you've got at home, I suppose. You could be as fit as a fiddle, but actually conditioned to play rugby is a different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's going to vary massively, because I've actually been really lucky in that I've managed to get weights and enough weights to pretty much maintain from a strength point of view. So, but I think, you know, like you say, it's going to be a massive spectrum of different entry kind of conditions. So, we were saying earlier, having people, you know, up to 100 kilograms, some of the girls in some of the teams at the moment running at us, we need to be as strong as we were before. So
even
yeah,
scrum,
I think
ball,
it's
technique, the whole
exactly.
thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, I think the safety thing is going to be the biggest thing going back in. It's going to just be in kind of assessing where people are at and how we can build things up in a way which is safe for everyone.
Or maybe, wishful thinking, it'll make the product even better. We might get away from the kind of the reliance on physicality that's been the last maybe 5-6 years of the game. It dominated the game. You might get kind of discrepancies in conditioning that actually get back to aiming for space. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, that would suit us as a team because we're quite small and we play, we like to play relatively quickly and open. At least our backs do. I'm not really one for that, but, you know. I think, like you say, things might change a little bit just because of the lockdown effect and the fact that, I mean, having a look at some of our guys, I do think probably we're going to come back slightly smaller than what we were initially. Which could influence the way that we play the game as well.
See, I was thinking that because obviously been watching a bit of the Super Rugby in Australia and New Zealand, and the game's played differently there anyway to what is in the Northern Hemisphere in some ways. But coaches with time on their hands are often quite a dangerous thing because you've got so much time to think and no real time to try out what they're thinking, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So for 3-4 months, you've got coaches, brilliant minds, quite creative minds, thinking all different bits and pieces. So what we get when rugby restarts might be a completely different product to what we had when it finished. Some of it might work, some of it may not work, but I'm actually quite excited to see if we are going to get a different product and different coaches with a lot of time in our hands come up with the new solutions and creative ideas.
Yeah, definitely. It will be interesting to see if, you know, like teams who've got a really kind of set style of play, if that becomes slightly different because of that as well.
And you've got, I suppose, the lockdown or the break crossing over seasons. So you've got different signings with different players. Yeah. So what your team looked like personnel-wise 4 months ago may be hugely different to what it looks like in 6 weeks when games start again. So a lot to look forward to, Jamie.
I'm delighted to be joined now on the podcast by Scotland and Exeter Chiefs star Sam Skinner. Sam, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. It's good to get you on. It's been a while since we spoke to you. No fault of your own. You've been involved in Scotland, but you had that pretty long layoff with injury, so it's good to get you back on to our channels. Let's start off with a quick one. Where are you just now, Sam? I presume you're down south.
Yeah, down in Exeter. Just started training again with the Chiefs. Luckily, just got a week off at the minute, so got my feet up.
Nice. And how are you finding the whole back to training? I mean, we've had a pretty long layoff. I know you guys have been back getting ready to get going again in the Gaelic Premiership, but how have you found the return to training?
Yeah, it's been good. I think we've been back in a bit sooner than the boys up in Scotland, but we at first were just doing basically running drills distant from each other, and we're allowed to chuck a ball around, which we had to wash all the time, things like that, all at distance. And then the last couple of weeks, to be fair, we've been actually doing proper training, which has been a bit of a shock to the system, but it's been good for the boys. And we had our first contact session last week, which was interesting, but we shall see how it goes.
Interesting about it?
We call it Mortal Kombat. Basically, it's a 3-on-3 drill where there's one ball carrier and two defenders. So you're never coming off good in that drill. It's not too bad. It's not too long, but it's pretty brutal. It's over before you know it. But yeah, rumors started spreading pretty quick. What was coming our way, and boys did pretty well. I just got a head down and got into it, and it's one of those things. I think because we've got no preseason games or warm up games, I imagine there'll be a fair bit of contact, bone on bone stuff before we get into the real stuff.
It's no surprise that would be my worst session. One ball carried against three defenders. When you're carrying the ball, it used to confuse me. What actually are the coaches looking for? It's obviously a defensive drill, but there's no challenge on the defender. Yeah. It's just basically get your body ready for getting smacked around.
It's just tuck the shoulder and hope for the best. I got an accidental swinging arm in the face. And it's funny.
The second part of that question was, are you able to choose your group of four?
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting. You run at one side to the defender. So there are three defenders, but only two in the contact. So you can choose to step left or right. So if you've got debuters on the left, you're probably going to step right.
Go right.
But sometimes you've not got a great choice and you just got to keep your head down. And there are definitely, you get some good tactics going into the little game. If you get boys running straight, or I don't know, you don't want to run too upright in that drill. Cause it's not going to.
Oh. When are you, so what's your date for first game back?
I think it's mid-August, maybe 14th or 15th.
Oh, so not long then.
No, not long. So yeah, we've literally got, I think we'll be back training tomorrow, and then we've potentially got 3.5 weeks and we're straight into it. So no, we definitely need some form of contact and probably some in-house game, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's quite good preparation, isn't it? Obviously, build up to full-on contact, then take a break, a few days off, just to see how the body reacts, get used to it, get a taster, and then it'll be full-on as of now, really.
Yeah, that's it. You sort of get a feel for when the contact's going to come, and they're pretty good. They look after us real well, so you can pretty much end yourself and see how you come out the other side. And I think there probably were a few sore bodies the next day, but your body adapts pretty quickly, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think you're 14th of August, as you say, I think it's your first game, and then right through until about the 24th of October. And there's obviously chat at the moment about how many games are going to be played in such a condensed time. So one thing that Exeter have always done well, in my opinion, is rotate their squad. They've got a strong squad, but that's going to be more important than ever with two games a week for a number of weeks as well.
It will be interesting. Looking at our squad over the years, it seems to get stronger and stronger, and we've got some serious competition going on right now. And it'll be interesting to see if the coaches decide to almost play two separate teams, or whether they go for a first team and then have people on the bench start the next game. And it would be interesting to see what they do. It's going to have to be a lot of discussions with the physios and manage some boys through. Because like you say, it's kind of like being a kid again when you play for your school and your club and you're playing two times a week. So, but this time it's 18 stone bloke running.
I suppose as well, one other thing, I assume everybody's fully fit because they've been such a long layoff. There won't be many occasions in our careers where the coaches have had a fully fit squad to choose from.
Yeah, there are obviously a couple of niggles when you've been off for a long period of time. I'm sure other clubs will have the same, where just little, muscle tears type thing, minor stuff when you get back into this sort of intense training. But like you say, there's
no more germ stuff.
We could put out two and a half teams, and I'd be pretty confident in all of them doing well in the Premiership. So it's some serious competition we've got, and it's good, but it's tough. Mm.
And just on that point that Mossy made there about the layoffs, you had that bad injury just before the World Cup, and I guess the positives are that this does allow you guys a little bit of rest and time to recover. But you've had a fair amount of time off. How are you feeling? How's the recovery been during that process before the World Cup, and how are you feeling yourself now?
Yeah, I feel mentally and physically pretty good as I've ever been, to be honest. I'm sure a lot of players have tried to use this as a positive, and one, look after their bodies and hopefully allow it to sort of propel their next stage of their career. It's certainly something I've tried to do anyway. So I've luckily lived with a couple of young lads here as well. So we've trained a fair amount and kept ourselves in as good a condition as possible without going overboard, so that you still feel fresh when you come back. Because that's important, you want to use this break properly. Because it is going to be pretty intense once the games come thick and fast. But yeah, physically and mentally, I'm pretty happy. Actually made me really appreciate, living down here. The weather was beautiful down here for the majority of lockdown. It's not a bad place to be when it's like that.
And you seem pretty happy down at Exeter as well. I know you've been there for a number of years now, but you seem pretty content and happy with the club and the whole environment around that area.
Yeah, it's a great place to be. I have grown up here all my life. So I don't know, we'll see what the future holds, but I do love being here. I'm very comfortable here. I've got friends and family all around me. So no, I can't be much more grateful really for the support I've had.
You've got quite a good Scottish contingent down there now. How's that been, having a couple of boys down there?
Yeah, it's good. we obviously had Sammy join us. I've never met him before, so it's good to have him down. And then it was just at a barbecue the other day with Johnny and Stuart as well, which is nice. So they've settled in. Well, Hoggy's obviously settled in great. You've seen that from his games as well. And Johnny's pretty happy as well. So he's just moved into his house a couple of days ago. He's got a bit of polishing the floorboards to do, I think, which will be tough on his back. But we'll see how he gets on with that. But yeah, he's good. He's loving life down here, actually.
Do you see a different side to Johnny? Because obviously he was, you would have seen him in the Scotland environment, but he grew up in and around Glasgow. But moving out of comfort zone in many ways, is there a different side to him you see from the national?
To be fair, Johnny, no. I've actually been in different training groups to him, so I haven't seen a lot of him in the club. But no, I haven't seen a change to him. Hoggy, definitely. he's been taken down a peg or two, which has been great to see. Yeah, he hasn't been able to get away with much. But I can tell now, Hoggy's been here for almost a year. Well, pretty much a year now, yeah. And I can just tell, even like, oh no, he's getting more comfortable now. he's taking a lot of banter and now he's starting to throw some back, which is good to see. Obviously, that's what you want. So yeah, but it's funny to see how they get on.
If we go back a little bit, Sam, to that, you know, we know that you made your debut, you know, against Fiji. We talked about that before with you, but we haven't really chatted around, you know, the unfortunate injury you got around the World Cup. If we go back to that game against France, did you know there and then when it happened that this was a bad injury? Did you know there and then that your World Cup dream was over?
Oh, I didn't. I've never done a hamstring tear. I've had a few injuries, to be fair, but I haven't done a hamstring tear because I've never run fast enough to do one. But I'm not very flexible. And this French guy practically made me do the splits. So I knew it felt pretty bad because I felt a couple of rips down my hamstring. Sort of felt a pop and then a rip. And some boys were saying, oh, you can do it in hamstrings a couple of weeks, you might be all right. Mm. But when I couldn't really walk off the pitch properly, I was like, this doesn't feel good. So I went and got a scan straight away and I was told I wasn't going to the World Cup there and then. But I knew I potentially had a chance to get out there if I rehabbed well. But then a couple of weeks later, I had a meeting with a top surgeon in the UK. He told me, no, the World Cup's over. Even if I wasn't to have surgery, it's over. So that was tough to take, to be honest.
Can I imagine, because you're going through that physical pain, but mentally as well, that must be so tough. Because I know how much you guys, you know, regardless if it's a World Cup, how much you guys put into it anyway. But, you know, you, like anyone, you've got aspirations to play at the top level. And to have that taken away from you mentally, I mean, how tough was that for you?
Yeah, it was really hard, to be honest. But, you know, it's life, isn't it? You just got to find a way to get on with it. I'm not any more special than anyone else. Happened to Gareth Anstoum, who, you know, was pretty much nailed on starter for Wales, you know, and he did his ACL and he's still struggling with injury now. So, no, look, I'm back fit, playing again. I'm loving life, to be honest with you. I can't complain. So, yes, it was hard and it was difficult, but I had people around me supporting me. I couldn't have asked for a better support network, really, and there's plenty of other things to be positive about.
Yeah, that's such a refreshing attitude, and it's one that I think a lot of people should share, because as harsh as it sounds, you don't really think about how bad the moment is in the moment.
No, you don't.
Certainly, yeah. That's what you think about, how to get out of it and what comes next. And, you know, there'll be a World Cup in 4 years' time, there'll be a World Cup in 8 years' time, there'll be big games. And I suppose it was really important as well to get back in the fold, just in that Six Nations game, just to kind of bookmark that season a wee bit as well and achieve a goal.
That was great to get back into the squad. It was obviously a goal of mine. I wanted to be back in sooner, but the injury you just can't be too careful with hamstring injuries. And even when I was back playing, even during that game against France when I played again, which is quite weird to go full circle, I could still feel my hamstring, but just from the scarring and stuff. And it's just having... So I'm still not perfect, even when I played those 4, 5, 6 games. Yeah, to get back fit and play, like you say, it's weird. People think you'd be like sort of crying and emotional and things, but you sort of instantly just sort of think, right, how can I get back? You don't really dwell on it too much. You just think, right, next job, what can I do?
Yeah, and I think I read somewhere else, Sam, that you I think you got away from rugby for a little bit as well a couple of days later. Did you not go down and meet some of your pals in London and just have a good catch up with non-rugby pals and just kind of almost separate yourself for a few hours?
Well, mate, if I'm honest, I went to London to see the surgeon, Faraz Haddad, who's the top one in the country. I was very lucky to have him, and I knew whatever he said was gospel. And this was probably the one time I did get emotional, because I always had hopes of getting back to the World Cup. And when he told me, right, it's over, I actually recorded the meeting on my phone, because I knew he'd tell me stuff and it would just go straight in my head.
Oh, yeah.
And then he told me, what if I don't have the operation, I just go for a World Cup here. He was like, no, you're done, mate. So I was like, right. That hit me pretty hard. So I was like, nice one, cheers. So then I don't know London that well. I do, but I don't know it that well. But I was basically near Madame Tussauds, about half an hour from Southwest London, where pretty much all my uni mates live. And I called them up and they were like, yeah, we're in the pub. And I was like, brilliant, see you there. So I had a Guinness waiting for me on my arrival with my hamstring halfway down my leg, which is fine, because I knew I was having an operation in a week's time. So mentally, that was actually really nice, because I went to uni, and it's quite funny, people like laugh that rugby is your job, and you sort of sit down with your mates there, and to them it means absolutely nothing, that what I was sort of telling them. They're just like, oh, it's just a hobby, mate, like, chill out, you're fine. So it was quite nice, just to basically completely step out from my rugby world and just go back to my uni life and pretend I was someone else, really, just for a night. So that was good. Obviously, the next morning I felt a little bit guilty, but it was worth it in the time.
What did you study?
I studied business economics. Which is fine. Just found as many ways to cut corners and get through my degree as I could.
I think, like, chatting to friends in sports, so like if you chat to your rugby mates, like, they understand like the heartache and all that, so they probably pander to it a little bit. So I can definitely relate to if you actually have those conversations with people who don't know the emotional side of it and how much it means to you, and like you say, they're like, oh, okay, so operation next week, cool. It definitely makes things better, I think, and I think that sometimes is the best thing when you're coming back from something like that.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny. It's such a different world. I remember being at uni and having training at nothing major. So I was getting up at 6:30 in the morning, and I'd come into the living room, and you know what uni houses are like. It was an absolute steak. I think I had to pick up like a chopping board and a bowl off the floor just to wash up before I cook my porridge. And then I remember my housemate just being on the sofa and like looking at me in such shock that they were still up, and they couldn't believe it. And they were like, what's going on? What time is it? I was like, it's 6:30, mate. It's the next day. So yeah, they were in a different world to me, but it was quite nice just to completely separate from it all.
It's funny. One thing somebody said, I think I've said it before, but it kind of sums it up quite nicely, is a professional athlete, you know, people in the working world probably say, oh, you don't work a day's work in your life. You know, a full day's work in your life. But then the other half of the sentence is actually, you never have a day off either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whereas kind of working life, you work a full day hard on, and then potentially have some time off at weekends, but you don't get a day off as a professional sportsman. You maybe don't work 9 to 5 every day, but there's never a moment off, which kind of sums it up quite nicely.
It is true. When we got this week off, I don't know why I was kidding myself, but first day I was like, oh, brilliant, I'll probably just rest the body and mind here and just chill out for the week. And then literally that evening I got an email saying, right, get these runs in, get these weight sessions in. And obviously, to more normal working people, running and training isn't work, but when you do it, and you're doing it when you've broken from rugby, it does kind of feel like a job when you sometimes it does anyway. And when you get an email like that, you're like, oh, bloody hell, yeah, obviously I've still got to train.
So are you, I guess, programmed by Exeter rather than having any influence from Scotland, from an S&C and point, that kind of point of view?
Yeah, pretty much. And then when I go up to camp, the S&C coaches liaise with each other and basically just find a way of, particularly during the Six Nations, it's more about just sort of maintaining my physical status rather than make any gains, just try and keep my body as fresh as possible. So Scotland just sort of take over and make you know, they basically
keep you taking over.
Yeah, pretty much.
When you left uni, you were I think originally you were going to plan to do like a gap year or something like that. You don't want to go traveling for a while before.
So I left school and I was going to go traveling before uni.
And where were you going to go? Did you have a plan, like a route? Did you?
No, I hadn't. It was before, because rugby happened so quickly during that gap year, I hadn't had a plan. I just had a few schoolmates that I was going to go to Asia with, and then potentially Australia after, which is as standard as it gets. But I was still looking forward to it. But yeah, they were quick chiefs to offer me a contract around November maybe. So I didn't really have any plans sorted, which was lucky really. Didn't have to claim any deposits back.
Am I right in thinking as well, you went through a bit of a transition at that point in your career, because you put on a lot of weight, did you not? And you changed your whole diet and you changed your whole gym plan, did you not? And you put on quite a substantial amount of weight.
Yeah, I pretty much looked a bit like Chris actually, but I was trying to play second row. And that was
although they did play in the back, so didn't you spend a little bit of time flying up?
Yeah. Did I actually think I followed your people. I was 18, keeping my hand across my head. Like, yeah, it wasn't great. But I was 90 kilos and I went up to about 105. They basically took me off rugby. I wasn't injured as such, but I was just in not great physical condition. So they stuck me in the gym. If I had to do that now, I'd probably be hating life. But at the time, I'd just been asked to contract by Chiefs. It was like every child's dream. I'd given up on it pretty much, and I'd suddenly been given a last, shot at it. And I was like, "Yeah, class, let's do this." So I kind of got a little bit fat, but put on 15 kilos and tried to keep it up and add a bit of weight on since. And yeah, I needed it, to be fair, just because your body can't compete if you're not heavy enough at this age, this kind of game now, really.
Can you remember who was playing for the Scotland Under 20s side?
Yeah. I remember having to try and tackle Magnus Bradbury a couple of times, which was tricky. I was playing at six. I think he was at eight, and I seemed to always I think he was just trying to pick me out, to be fair, which is good. Jamie Ritchie, I think, played. I think he might have been captain, actually. I'm not sure. And then I think Xander was a tight end, maybe. And then Rory Hutch at fly half. Mm-hmm. I think there would have been a few other boys in there as well, actually. Mm-hmm. It was a good game, a good squad.
Yeah, a lot of those guys have come through, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, yeah. Actually got quite a young, what feels like a young squad coming through. Sort of now.
A young forward pack, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually. Even Johnny Gray is only 26, even though he's got 50 caps, which is just
Well, that's the thing, like, you say young, but it's experience. Like, quite often the correlation between experience comes with age, but actually with the Scottish pack at the moment, and as you say, across the Bartland, really, there's experience, but there's also youth, which is quite confusing in some ways, but it's brilliant really to have that experience from such a young
team. Really exciting, yeah. I look at the squad with a lot of confidence and quite excited, to be honest, and ultimately I've got a fight to get into it myself, but it's an exciting couple of years, definitely seeing what we can do with the squad.
I was going to say, you guys are obviously back in the next wee while working towards games. How are you feeling about getting back with the Scotland boys?
Can't wait, to be honest. Playing at Murrayfield is probably the thing I've missed most. It's nothing can touch it, really. It is incredible. We'll see. I'm looking forward to it, trying to get, if I can get an opportunity. These things I can't sit here and right now and be like, I can't wait to play for Scotland again, because like that, it won't happen. So all I can think about, I know it's so boring, but literally I can't risk it. I just have to think about trying to get into the Exeter squad, which is hard enough as it isn't right now. And then if I can do that, then try and play well and impress and get up to Scotland. So obviously it'd be a dream to get back up there, but you just can't take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. And, with the old Scotland thing, Sam, I think you mentioned before that you kind of grew up supporting both Scotland and England because you've got that kind of divided household. But, your parents, your dad's side, isn't it? Your dad's... What does it mean to him to come up and see you play? I know what it was like when he watched you in the Fiji game in your debut, but what's it like for him to come up and watch you in particular?
Yeah, I mean, for the whole family, it's incredible. But there is obviously an added extra for Dad. He's a nervous wreck watching me play for anyone, to be honest. Mum's just worried about me getting injured, which seems to happen all the time right now. So annoying. So she's drinking herself silly, just trying to stay sane. And then Dad's... doesn't speak to anyone, and then he's an emotional wreck, to be honest. He just is nervous as hell, wants me to do as well as I can. It's so funny. And then when I come back off the pitch, well, to be honest, the last few times I've been injured for Scotland, which has been a shame. But other than that, it's just pure elation. Dad's, yeah, that moment after the Fiji game was hands down the best moment of my life, and I will never forget that feeling. And the footage you guys got of it for me when I sort of embraced my family at the end was, yeah, it's incredible, to be honest. I was so lucky to have that. And yeah, that was a big part of me wanting to play for Scotland was, you know, my family roots and growing up supporting Scotland. And I don't know, my parents were like, no, you're not doing this for us, do it for yourself. But to see the smile on their faces, you know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty special.
And Rich, your dad, you know, he's a big rugby fan as well. What's he like in the crowd when he's watching you? Is he quiet sounds, or is he shouting or what's he doing?
He sounds exactly the same as your dad. He is definitely shouting. He does not speak to anyone.
Yeah,
if he comes to watch my club games, he leaves my mum and he walks up and down the touchline with the play. And then I'm pretty sure he feels the wins, losses and the injuries more than I do. I remember my first Six Nations, I got an injury in my first game, which, similar to you, they thought might get back, but they ruled me out for the whole competition. And I remember he came home after I'd had the news from the doctor and he was like, are you okay? And I was like, oh yeah, like I kind of thought that was going to be the case. And he was like, I'm not okay. I was like, I'm really sorry you're not okay, but we kind of have to get through this. But yeah, no, he's brilliant. And like you say, like, it's amazing to have people like that there who you're doing it for, and it makes all those moments special.
And Mossy, I know, what were your parents like when you were playing? Were they just, I can imagine them just maybe sitting quite quietly, or were there any vocal parents there for you?
Not really, no. Just, it's really similar, isn't it? It's just like, it's just a sense of pride. And it's funny, I was asked quite recently to kind of give views on playing for Scotland for the guys at Scottish Rugby. And it's funny because I genuinely think, like Sam says, when you start out, you're doing it for everybody else. You're not doing it for yourself at all. Yeah. You are actually doing it for other people. And I think as certainly your career progresses, it changes a little bit. You're still doing it for other people, but you become a little bit more kind of driven, and you have to block out more negative things than you do as a young player. And it does become a little bit more about you kind of pinpointing on that focus. Whereas when you start out, it's for everybody that's ever helped you, parents, family, teachers, right, coaches. And it just shows you what it means to play, really. But I'll be genuinely honest and say, as you get older, you're still doing it for other people, but you have to actually really get into the core of yourself and continue to deliver to improve, because it gets harder and harder.
Do the nerves ever go away for you guys, like Sam, Rach? Like, if you look, well, Mossy, you look at your first game, your last game, were you still the same nerves-wise? Totally different. And Sam, Rach, where are you now in that journey?
I'm still a nervous wreck. Pretty much before, I'm pretty known for it, to be honest. Before most games.
How do you show your nerves?
Test, anything.
How do people know you're nervous, Rich? What do you?
I go quiet for sure.
You're quiet.
Headphones go on. Uh-huh. Leave me be. But then, to be fair, just before you go out and you kind of come in, do a team talk, whatever it is, that's then I'm like, switch on, it's okay. So I almost want to like fast forward that whole day and just get to like just before you go out. The warm-up's the worst bit. Mm-hmm. Once I'm warmed up, I'm fine. But that chunk of time between kind of getting up in the morning to actually walking out on the pitch is the absolute worst.
Well, so you said it's completely different. What do you mean by that?
I never had a care in the world in my first cap. Didn't care.
Really?
Excited, happy. Just this overwhelming desire to prove I could do it and just enjoy it. And then as more expectation builds on you, it does become more difficult. And you worry more about a mistake the older you are than the younger you are, I found. And I totally agree with Rachel that the nerves, they don't affect in any way, shape or form when you play, but it's the period between pre-match meal at the hotel, getting on the bus, getting to the ground, you start to get all the, not self-doubts, but doubts and what-ifs and scenarios. But you get so much, I got so much strength and just, I suppose, empowerment as soon as you cross the line, the whistle goes, because you can actually act on it. You're not you're not thinking about what if, you're actually in the moment and in the now, and that's where you're in control of that, so it's fine. So there's beforehand, the older you got, the kind of worse it got for me.
Does that sound similar to you, Sam?
A little bit different, actually. For me, it comes in waves. I was bricking it for my first Scotland game. I was absolutely bricking it. And then for my second one, Johnny Gray was ill the day, but I didn't know that. I just thought he was nervous, and I heard him being sick, and I was like, oh my God, what is going on? I was just desperate to prove myself in front of my teammates and Scotland Nation, really. So I probably would have been a bit of an unknown entity to them. Mm-hmm. So that's where my nerves come from. And then once I play three or four games in a row, my nerves sort of go away, and it just turns into excitement. I know people trust me, I trust them, confidence comes, and I'm fine. But I do sort of had a thought a while back. It is funny, you have these sort of big guys in a tunnel waiting to go out, and then in everyone's heads, they're all absolutely bricking it. you think that guy wants to kill you, but actually he's just thinking, yes, I'm actually bricking it and want to play well. So it's a funny thought, really. But it comes and goes. Like, for example, my first game back for Chiefs, hopefully when I get it, I'll be nervous for that one as well, because, you know, competition for places, you want to play well. But once you start getting to the rhythm, it's all right. You're away, to be honest.
And just remind us, Sam, when is the first game, and who are you playing? Who are extra playing in August?
Well, I think Chris said it's the 14th of August. We've got Leicester Tigers. So we'll probably have, is it Ndolo running down our channel?
Which would be nice. New signing,
Matty Scott.
He takes a bit of stopping.
Yeah. Matty Scott at Leicester as well. Well,
he'll be a hell of a player for them.
Yeah, well, we wish you all the best on your return, and we hope to see you out with Extra soon. Really appreciate your time, Sam, and all the best for the new season. And we're looking forward to see you hopefully again in Scotland camp come the autumn.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having
me. Thanks, Sammy.
Cheers, Sammy. Cheers. Mossy, Rach, great to hear from Sam Skinner, and it's good to hear that he's fit and healthy and looking forward to getting back to rugby. One of the things he talked about, Mossy, when we talked about the S&C question that Rachel asked him was, he said he looked a little bit like you when he started playing. Now, you've always had the kind of the same shape, I think, when you played rugby, but was there ever any pressure on you to either, you know, change your physique, change your body form, or were you quite firm when you were playing?
Yeah, like, I mean, there was always a quest to, well, it changed, really. I mean, I was never going to be a big person. I went through different training profiles, different, you know, techniques of being banned from running in pre-season to try and add weight and gain weight. And I never really changed, in all honesty. I got stronger. The one thing I did was get stronger and more powerful. But I was never going to put a huge amount of weight on. So, and if you think about it, if I did, it would only be 2 or 3 kilograms at most. And I'd go from being 79 or 80 kilograms to 82 or 83, which in the grand scheme of things isn't really going to make that much a difference to your performance. So quickly it became what I had to do was be as powerful and as strong as I could, and as dynamic as I could. So I never really had the capability to, I think they said they put about 15 kilograms on or something, didn't you, in a short period. That was never going to be for me. But most of my career was played through a time where size was more important. Like, it was a really dominant aspect. Now I think I've got a wee bit more dynamism in a lot of the teams who play, and a lot of the style of play that teams try to develop. So, yeah, the pressure's probably not the right word. You know, you're helped to develop, to make you as effective as possible. But I would say, yeah, strength and conditioning coaches would rather I was a wee bit heavier, put it that way, but it wasn't possible.
And Rachel, it was quite interesting to hear what, you know, him talking about his relationship with his parents and how they react to watching him play. And we talked about your dad as well. We didn't really ask him the question, but, you know, it must be an amazing lift for you that, you know, your dad comes down to all the games. I know he's walking up and down the touchline like a touch judge, but, you know, you wouldn't want it any other way, would you?
I mean, my dad is a massive part of kind of why I've played sport. He's since I was probably about, probably since I could walk, he's been watching me play, and between him and my mum, like, ferrying me around at to every sport under the sun as a kid, and then on to hockey and then rugby, and how much they've kind of travelled the world to, I mean, they do get some stuff out of it, but travelled the world to watch me play and have that support is just amazing. And like you say, like without them there, it just wouldn't be quite as special. And it is a massive part for me that is a lot for them as well. Mm. It's really, I think it's nice to hear from like another athlete and having kind of similar values in that respect. And it is nice to see that.
It comes across so well, Sammy, doesn't he? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's so it's philosophical about a lot of things, but some of the stuff he was saying about his recovery from injury and looking ahead and just the fact that he said so many times about how hard he's going to have to work to get his position. Like, yeah. He's taken nothing for granted at a club or international level. Yeah. Seems to take everything in his stride. Like, when he came out in the national setup initially, he's a guy who could fit seamlessly into what Gregor wanted to do, whether it was, you know, she says, is one ball carry against three defenders smashing through, or whether it was his subtle hands to release players. He, you know, joked about it, but he did play a bit of time at standoff when he was lighter, Jamie. But he's just such a great asset for us to have in terms of his philosophy and how he comes across, but his ability to play loads of different ways in the field as well.
Remember when he kind of came onto the scene and not really knowing much about him, and kind of him standing out almost in a good way. I remember one of his first games, he got like player of the match for Scotland.
Yeah, against Fiji, yeah.
And then
I think I picked it. Well, I know I picked it, but
yeah, and
he deserved it.
His skill set was just like brilliant across the park, and particularly around like the line out stuff. And I think that's an area where you can see someone's kind of maturity and whether they have the kind of head for it in that environment. So to come in and perform well and at set pieces, particularly when you've got kind of people around you, like he says, with 50 odd caps. And he fits in seamlessly. It's incredible, really, isn't it?
And on that as well, I haven't got my book, but I'm sure he was man of the match against Fiji. When was he not playing back row as well? So it wasn't even his normal position that he'd normally
played. He moved to six. I think he started in second row, then moved to six.
He had to adapt during that game as well. But again, what about that versatility, Moss, Rach, in the current game? Do players have to have that now to get more of a look in, or?
I think so. I think most players have it. It's funny because, again, rugby's kind of, it always changes. And that's what we're saying about a change after 3 or 4 months without rugby, what change they're going to see. But rugby was going a bit specific for me. So, like, there was players only really had to be exceptional at one thing. Whereas I think it's changing again, like, being able to play two or three different positions effectively is really important. Whereas maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we went really down the almost NFL-specific route for a tight head has to do X, Y, and Z. Second row does X, Y, and Z. A fullback does X, Y, and Z. But now there's much more kind of need to do two different things. And Sammy fits that perfectly because it's not easy. And I mean, you'll know better than me, Rach, about line-out calls. But even understanding your role in a line-out from a second row and a back row in the same game is vastly different.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, like, with the way that rugby is, you could be, I don't know, in Sam's or myself, like we could be second choice at six and then 2 second row injuries later and you're starting in the second row. So I think with the nature of the game and like you say, with it moving to being a lot more physical, injuries happen and that's a big part, particularly in the women's game where we've not got necessarily the same depth in every position. You've definitely got to be versatile and kind of just willing to put in an effort wherever you're put. I know I've won Six Nations. I played across the whole back row and at hooker in my second one. So it does happen. And I think the more versatile you can be, the better these days.
And we're getting a wee bit hypothetical, but if you think about, if you're someone who moves position in the forwards and you start in one position, you finish in a different position, hypothetical, yes, but the last line of the game, the crucial line of the game could be you have to win a line out or you have to get the call right in order to have one final chance to win the match, and you're in that secondary position, if you like.
Yeah.
So the discipline that you have to apply in the week building up to know exactly that, not just, you know, most people think, oh, I hope the first thing goes well, but if you're covering 2 or 3 positions, you have to have that discipline that not only the first thing goes well in your favourite position, but in the second position, you have to be on the money on the 79th minute and a line out in a position you've not played a huge amount. It's a lot of preparation. And Sam you know, is comfortable in that, it shows you how good he is.
Yeah, definitely.
Taken by Patterson, who's injured in the process. Try-saving tackle.
Now, before we go, Bossy, we put out a clip last week of... We've been putting out some archive clips, so we've been digging into the archives, finding some key moments, whether that's line breaks or tackles or tries. And one of the ones that we put out last week was your tackle against Ben Foden, I think in 2011, again, at Twickenham. I might get the year wrong there. Do you remember it? Because it went down really well on our channels. And how sore was the boot to the face that you gave you after you put him into touch?
I do remember it. It's... I didn't see your clip, but I do remember what you're talking about. Do you remember? Yeah, I remember it, because it's kind of, it's what you have to do. Like, you know what I mean? It's not, you're the last line of defence, you've got to get there. I've missed them, I've made them. But what's important to me is that you put yourself in the position to make it. Now, I would far rather, you know, put yourself in a last ditch situation than not. It was quite close, I think, at the time of the game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I remember getting back and making a difference. I actually think I'd made a better tackle earlier on the game, believe it or not.
Right.
But it was on Chris Ashton. He came through the line and I was centre field on the 22, and he could go either way, and I managed to kind of just get him. I had much less time to think about it, but it wasn't in the corner, it wasn't last ditch, it wasn't kind of you know, seen as heroic, but I think it was actually a harder tackle to make. The one before him was just get your angles right and try and accelerate in, and yeah, it was got a knee in the face, but made worse by Parksy celebrating by slapping me in the face.
you do your analysis and you do your research before these games. Did you obviously know the pace that he would have had? You knew that you could take up, you know, did you know all that stuff, or was it just a case of just run as fast as you can and get the angle right?
It's, in all honesty, it's getting the angle right is the most important thing. So it's less about, well, in a situation like that, for me, it's less about the player who you're defending against and more about how you can actually position the player to where you want them. And I'd done loads of work that season, actually, just one-on-one work with Graham Steadman. Steady was a defence coach. And I did one-on-one work in a five-metre channel just in the footwork, because it's a hard, hard position to be in if you get in the wrong position. So if you get too square or if you go too hard, you're beaten really quite easily with somebody as quick and as good footwork as that. So we've done loads of low-level stuff, and I suppose it's just great to see a correlation between doing a wee bit extra at the end of a session, just 5 minutes, just in your footwork, just in your position, not contact, not a huge amount of physicality, just getting in the right position or working to get the right angle come to fruition. But yeah, at one point I thought it was going to make it, so I had to... They stretch.
I had to pin the years back. Rach, did you manage to watch it? Did you see it?
Yeah, I've just looked now. It's pretty impressive. Like you say, I think the timing of it, the time that you went for him is probably, there's a split second there before you actually go for the tackle. It's, if you're a second later, you're going to miss him, like you're saying, he's going to get it. So, pretty impressive.
you're almost trying, I'm going to be maybe coach here, you're almost trying to position the player at the position you want. So you want to come in, and it's almost like a Y shape. So if you go too hard or too aggressive at the attacker, they'll step you, probably in your inside shoulder.
Yeah.
If you don't go aggressive enough, they're going to gas you on the outside. So you're almost like a curved approach. As I say, for a kind of coaching hat, little bits of footwork in a 5 metre channel, one on one at the end of the session, go a long way to making that an easier tackle. If you don't do those wee bits of extra work, then you're faced with that. It is quite daunting, because it's pretty easy to get it wrong.
Yeah, no, it's a great clip, and I'm glad we could put it on our channel. So if you haven't seen it, check
you'd
it out.
You'd have made it, Jamie. You'd have made it.
I'd have stepped inside, so we're under the post, but it's a brilliant bit of play, Moss, and it's good that we can show it to our fans. So yeah, but thanks for the interview. It's really interesting.
That's all from us here on the official Scottish Rugby podcast, but do join us next week for more exclusive content.